In this week, on the 13th of August 1983, after the Dons had drawn a pre-season friendly 2-2 against Charlton Athletic, manager Dave Bassett assessed his just promoted side's prospects. "This time we want to stay up," he said. "I think we have more of a chance because almost all our current players experienced third division football on our last visit. We won't be looking just for survival. We want to be promoted, but we will need a little bit of luck, not bundles on it, just a fair share." Players experiencing being back in this division for the second time, needing a little bit of luck, not just survival, go for a promotion. Could it be? With the same old Wombles, we're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. Traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If we win or we lose, we just go on.
Hello, dear listener. Welcome to the show. And I'm delighted, as always, to be joined by Monfred, just back from his experience at the Edinburgh Fringe. Niall Cooper. Hello, Niall.
Hello, Matty. Hello, everybody. I am so gutted to have missed it. I did a great time in the festival. This, for me and for our dear listener, is going to be joyous because Adam, Matt and Mark are going to have to recount the whole of Lincoln to me because I was not there and I just want to listen and get all that stuff. I did not get enough WhatsApp messages because you're all too busy being damn happy. Not fair. I wanted a whole update throughout the whole thing. I was left having to just get WhatsApp messages with our previous guest, Mark Thomas, who was also at the Fringe. We ran into each other and we were basically going, why is nobody giving us any decent updates?
Oh, sorry. Guys, hold on a minute. Hold on. Wait, I just need to, that clanging noise of that name that was dropped. I just need to, just need to pick it up again. It's, All right. Okay. I'm so sorry. I didn't realise he was going to yak on for so long. And I'm also joined by, as always, our man with the buttons, the producer, Dr. Adam Proctor. Hello, Adam. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good.
Lovely shirt you're wearing, by the way.
Thank you. I've got the green hoop top one now as well. So I'm sorted for the season. Yeah. And I've got a new hat, which obviously you all saw. Blue, a nice blue one with the old WFC crest on it. So, yeah, I've spent all my money on stuff. Wimbledon stuff.
He's keeping the club afloat. The wonderful man with all the football knowledge, knowledge that he's going to be using at a quiz. I think he has to disappear off earlier to go and take part in a pub quiz. Mr. Tall Mark Lewis. Hello, Mark. How are you doing?
Good evening. Adam's not keeping him the club afloat on his own. I did spend £91 myself in the shop on Saturday.
Yeah. I just found the receipt in my pocket and was like, oh, sugar, that was quite a lot of money.
The shop did magnificently. So we were all there on Saturday. Well, we were, myself, Adam and Mark were there. Niall obviously was at the Edinburgh Fringe for our fantastic first game of the season, a 2-0 victory over Lincoln City. And what a game, chaps. What's the main takeaway? Mark, what was your main takeaway from it?
The easiest thing to say is that, in hindsight, that was one of the games that you would have looked at and said, yeah, if we're going to get 3 points anyway in the first month of the season, it'll be against Lincoln. But actually, my biggest takeaway was, two things. Number one, we're playing a different formation. We name-checked it a little bit for those of us who are Luton. We're not playing two up front. We're actually playing, in this case, Stevens on his own up front with Saturday. It was Marcus Brown straight in from the cold, having not played preseason at all, really, with Hippolyte just behind. That's the first thing. But actually, the main thing is my kids were quite impressed by how decisive the referee was. And obviously, you can imagine on social media, our Imps fans, our Lincoln fans, were quite spicy about supposedly the way that Stevens dived. But I think if someone raised his boot towards me, towards my chest, I would try and take any kind of evasive action, frankly. So I think bang on, bang to rights on the red card and bang to rights on the penalty. So I don't think the referee actually was particularly out on a limb when giving either decision. But more importantly, with the opposition down to 10 men, we actually took advantage. And that, for me, tactically and just from a maturity point of view, is the biggest takeaway, that we were well worth our 2-0 win. Oggs almost got a lovely skimming half volley towards the end, which would have been a great thing for him because he's never scored, and 3-0 probably wouldn't have flattered us completely.
No, I thought so, and Adam, I don't. I mean, I've had a look back on this and the sending off, and what was quite interesting is we got a WhatsApp message from one of our DTB members who was in the boardroom, saying that the IMPS directors looked at it, looked at both instances, and were like, "Oh yeah, that's right." And my understanding is that Matty Stevens has got a bruise on his upper part of his body and on his arm. The fact that he went down holding his face, I think, is an immediate reaction to where the foot was, because the foot was very, very high, and Studs facing right out. So
We
it
also
was
have to remember
clearly.
that Matty Stevens doesn't really know the difference between his arm and his shoulder after that goal against Gillingham, I think, wasn't it? Last season?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
No,
that was a
no,
perfect.
Mark, that was clearly, as we well know, not a handball. We did the whole research, we had the picture. Adam did that brilliant, like, drew out the thing, which what was handball, what's not handball. We know that was clearly not a
Moving
handball,
on,
because
that was League Two. That was so League
That
Two.
was
We're not in
that's
League Two
so
anymore.
yeah. But I mean, unfortunately, Gillingham are coming back again to haunt us in our nightmares. Adam, what would you make of it, mate?
Oh, it's great. I mean, it was just what I wanted. I said on the last pod that we need to come and win at home, and we did it. I mean, yeah, I was obviously, yeah, the clearly sending off, like, yeah, it was really bad. I mean, it's a good job it didn't hit him in the face, to be honest. And yeah, you're gonna roll if you're gonna get attacked. Basically, you're gonna roll down on the floor and make sure the ref understands you've been really badly hurt. And if that happens to be holding your face, then whatever, you know. I just that's rubbish. And yeah, the handball was ridiculous. But it was great. Yeah, I think we could have got 3 or 4. I wasn't when once they went down to 10 men, I was a little bit worried, because you know that can go one way or the other, can't it? A lot of the times, suddenly something happened, the 10 men seem to suddenly find space and do things. So I was pleased with how it went, really was. And those what was the there was those three corner who took those three corners that they were trying to curl in?
Hippolyte, Hippolyte,
Hippolyte, because they
amazingly in the
suddenly
first,
realised that Reeves is not the only one that's allowed to take
It
corners.
was amazing. Like, he took three
Hippolyte,
corners in a row.
I wasn't there. I wasn't there. I need one of you just to talk me gently through what you're talking about, because
Well,
sorry, I didn't
in
get
the
those
first
updates.
5 minutes of the game, we got three corners down the far end,
In a row.
right hand side, so the furthest corner from where we sit by the scoreboard, basically. Miles Hippolyte took all three of them in swingers with his left foot. The first two were in swingers to the near post, which the goalkeeper had to palm over the bar because they would have gone straight in. I don't remember when we last scored a direct goal from a corner, probably Glyn Hodges in his prime, and that's like
I know, I
1993.
really thought he was going to do
The third one, he then varied and went back post, and Lewis's header was comfortably saved. But actually, we are so poor at set pieces, and the article that the Lincoln fan wrote was all about how wonderful Riley Taylor was at set pieces, and the fact he's already scored two, so that would be a big threat for them, and they didn't threaten at all. So that really set the tone, because it meant that the crowd got going properly. If you watch Match Day Uncovered came out again today, a wonderful editing as usual. You can see the look on the Lincoln centre back's face when the penalty is given against him, and it's not, "Oh my God, that's an absolute disgrace." It's, "Oh shit, I got."
I've been caught. I
It's
mean,
'cause he was trying to
it's
catch
so obvious.
it.
I mean, what's interesting is, and that's right, there's a clip on the socials, the Wimbledon socials, about Miles Hippolyte's pass through to Matty Stevens, who then crosses the ball in. And Hippolyte's vision, I mean, he really is coming into his own. I think, Niall, you alluded to it last week. We kind of like we'd missed him, really, and he's been exceptional. It was an amazing pass through to Stevens, who gets clear in the box, crosses the ball, and the defender who's on the ground trying to obviously stop the ball going across. It's sort of like he eventually volleys it hand, you know, it's a volleyball technique out. And there's it's not like he's only traveled a short distance, it's traveling some distance by the time it's got to him. So it was a clear penalty. And then Matty Stevens steps up. I think we're all nervous about, you know, penalties. But he was calm as you like and slide it in. And I noticed that when he's running away celebrating, he
He
goes past one
does.
of their players and gives him a look. So there must have been some
And
words said.
actually, if you then read the interview he did,
Yeah.
which is on socials yesterday, again, it clearly was meaning rather more to him,
Yes.
understandably,
Yep.
because very sadly, by all accounts, one of his cousins passed away last week, and that's what we forget. Generally speaking, we go to football matches and we want to use that as a release. But the other thing is, of course, the footballers themselves are human beings. So they're going to have scenarios where something's happened in their life or someone's passed away very close by to them. And then all we're going to say is, oh my God, he hasn't headed the ball forward or whatever. And I don't know that we ever necessarily give the appropriate time of day or potential emotional bandwidth, so to speak, to those
Yeah.
players.
I think JJ was very good coming out saying afterwards that, Matty Stevens had gone through a very tough time in their family. And I was seeing, again, some posts on socials from Matty Stevens' dad, dedicating the goal to his cousin Blue. So it's great. I mean, that he took it brilliantly. And it did just mean you could see him also after he gives a look to the player, he sort of like points up to the skies and, obviously, gives the goal to his cousin. As the game goes on, I think in the start of the second half, Lincoln did come at us, and their fans were really up for it. I mean, like, they were really giving it some. I think, as always, when you get a player sent off, whether it's, a legitimate reason or you think you've been conned, you will always sort of like get behind your team, and they were really they had a lot of pressure on the ball at the start of the second half. Without really harming us. I mean, I can't remember Bishop having to make a save
In the whole game,
in the
no,
whole
even
game.
less than Luton, frankly.
Yeah, it didn't have to, so we defended brilliantly. I mean, again, Short Shorts Joe Lewis does this amazing defensive run and tackle. So they get a ball and they're running through and they've got 2-on-1. The guy squares the ball. I mean, he
It's
squares it
actually
very, very
three on
quick.
one
Yeah.
if you watch it from behind Bishop's goal.
Yep.
If the guy had either had a shout or listened to a shout, he could have passed it left and walked the ball in. He could have shot himself and
Yeah, I
walked the
know. I
ball
could.
in.
Yeah.
He chose the hardest of the three, but natural to him, to pass the ball forward. But Lewis had actually lost the ball himself and made it like a 50-yard burst
Yeah.
and got the
It was
clearance,
a run and a
which
half. It
even
was.
the other end, you couldn't appreciate how amazing that was.
No, I didn't know at the time. It hadn't really clocked until I watched the replay back, and I was like, "Oh my word! How far and how fast has Lewis run?" And he's totally cut out that pass. And you could kind of see the player was also surprised that he was there because he was coming from nowhere. Like he literally came from nowhere. It was unbelievable. So yeah, I was yeah, absolute work. Yeah, proper workhorse again as ever.
But
I mean,
actually, I
it.
don't understand how Simway wasn't man of the match.
No, well, that's weirdly, but Asimwe was the one who was given the presentation up in the 1889 lounge. So I don't know whether that's because Joe had injured his arm, he got knocked, didn't he? But he's fine apparently. So yeah, that was a bit weird. But yeah, a few people said to me, I don't. Joe Lewis was obviously announced as man of the match, but why Asimwe wasn't man of the match? They
I
but
know.
he should have had a hat trick as a
oh,
right back.
yeah.
I mean, incredible performance. Lovely feat for the second goal. And again, that was, it's from a corner. The ball's headed back into him. It's landed at his feet. He's done a wonderful drag back and shot in. It's just been brilliant. And then later on, obviously, there's another ball that drops to him, and he's tried to chip it. Their goalie's made the goal look very small, so he's not got much space. So he knocks it over the bar. But an amazing performance. And he was named in the Sky Bet one. Team of the week, so rightly
So
so.
obviously, Matt and Niall and I had seen them before, but for you, Matt and Adam, Bishop, Seddon, Asimwe, Orsi as sub, Hackford as sub, who impressed you the most?
Well, Sinway's great, but I have to say, I was actually impressed with Seddon. I was impressed with Seddon because he never got caught out of position. I mean, he's clearly not bombing on like left as we've had in the past, but His positioning, I thought, was great. He was very rarely beaten. Was always tracking back, gave hardly any space on that side. So I thought he was really good. Senway was outstanding, but I think there's something to be said for Seddon. Bishop, his encouragement, his shouting, his joy of the game is beautiful to see. But I was quietly impressed with Seddon. I didn't see enough of Hatford or C. You know, still having trouble with that.
Hatford is very young. I saw him pre-match with his partner, and they got a little baby in a pushchair. And I'm thinking, hang on, how young are you, mate? You know,
wow.
But he's like a 20-year-old just come down from Sheffield. He clearly didn't know the right way into the stadium. I did feel a bit sorry for himself and his partner as well, because she was like just driving around with the baby in a pushchair. I hope someone takes, you know, one of the other players, girlfriends, wives, families, whatever, takes her under the wing, because that's a harsh thing to do through the winter to, you know, to come to games. I think he's going to be something, though. He's quick, and he definitely has a point to prove, because he clearly didn't necessarily have quite at the top of the green at Sheffield United, or obviously very much at Port Vale.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I mean, I think obviously the sending off helped, and who knows what it'd have been otherwise. And I think Lincoln looked very strong. I mean, they as a team, they look very big and very strong. And I think they're probably going to do well. But I think the last couple of games has given us confidence that we can compete. It's going to be tough. I mean, we're going to have to keep this level of performance. I don't know how long we can keep this level of performance up. But we have now got players who can come in. You know, if something goes wrong, we have got options. But we're going to have to keep that high intensity level. And also great to score two goals, not just one.
Well, we actually looked like goals. Scoring more goals than just two goals as well.
Yeah. And
we remembered the best way of actually protecting a 1-0 lead, let alone a 2-0 lead, is to keep on attacking.
Yeah. And really, it should have been. I mean, towards the end, it could have been 3 or 4. There were some bad decisions.
I thought it definitely could have been 3 or 4 at the end. The thing that I liked a lot, actually, near the end was that, and if you watch some of the replays or whatever, the players are clearly enjoying the end of the game. Like, you can, like, when Ogundeir, like, misses that shot, he turns around, he's laughing. Like, he's just like, I'm having fun. And I'm like, this is great, you know. So I think if we can keep, if that's the kind of energy we bring because they're having fun, and sure, it would be different if we were losing 2-0. I'm sure there wouldn't be as much fun happening, but it felt like we were on it. So I was excited.
But talking of bringing energy, well, like Jackson made two subs before the hour mark.
I know.
Against a team that were tiring, and Seddon, having done the solid job he did, he then, even at 1-0, brought on Sasu and said, just run at your fullback. Just actually be a complete nuisance.
Yeah, and Sass did really well to get. I mean, he tripped over his feet a couple of times, but he's kept the ball, and he's driven in from the side and just sent one over the bar. He had a good game. You know, it's positive. I mean, I want to swing on to a little bit to look at what's going to happen at the Gillingham game, because I think a lot of us were thinking I'm not sure we're going to get anything from that.
That's because it's Gillingham, not because it's League Cup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you both actually, Mark. I mean, I kind of like, you know, I'm not, you know, I've been the voice of pessimism and like, you know, pleasantly surprised so far. But I do look at Gillingham and go, like, do we have to have a game on Tuesday? And I was listening back to the pod that we did before, and we have made absolutely no reference to this game at all. Right. So it's like, do we have to play it? You know, and I love the idea of the League Cup. I'd love the League Cup to have more kudos than it does. You know, but we've got a good settled five at the back, and I would really want not to get any injuries in that five, because they look like they're actually look like they can cope with the level we're at. And that's kind of where I'm at. And then equally, when we're talking about with Hippolyte, Smith and Reeves, that feels like a good combo as well. So there's a developing of a very good core starting 11. And having any kind of disruption to that is not where I'm at the moment. And Gillingham feels like a disruption to that.
Well, I think there is going to be wholesale changes. I would have thought tomorrow there'll be wholesale. I mean, Harbottle will start, Bugle will start, McDonald will start. So, there'll
I
be.
don't know. I don't know if McDonald will start. I think. Well, it'd be interesting to see
I
because
would have thought
has
so.
McDonald just been told, "Look, you'll play in the Peter Trophy games, whatever they call it nowadays, and otherwise you're just the reserve, a solid reserve, but you're just the reserve." But yeah, I agree. Harbottle will start. Hackford will start. Possibly Orsi up front as well.
Yeah.
But we
Bugle.
haven't got. Well, I mean, I think I showed a little flick through the program. With the lineups on the back at last, fantastic.
Yay. Brilliant.
It turns out the reason that that has happened now is because it was in Football Manager's contract previously that they had to be on the back. But because they're now paying us less money because they're only on two shirts rather than three, then that's been taken out of the contract, which means we can put them on the back. And the old people like me, the font is too small, so the program manager has messaged me and said that he will look to increase it. We just can't sign too many more double name players like
It's funny though, Mark, because literally I was thinking about this on the way in. I was like, oh yeah, because it was mentioned on one of the other podcasts about the fact that Luton had the team sheet on the back. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's where I want it because it was so much easier to check it. But I was on the train coming in, was like, yeah, but that's Football Manager's has the back page because it's a big sponsorship page. That's why it's not going to happen. And of course, I got there and I was like, wow, it's on the back. But then, like you just said, the font is way too small. Like, seriously, I could not read it. It was driving me mad. Like, I know that we've all got reading glasses and whatever, but it's tiny. I know. It's like ridiculous. It's like they can make it bigger for sure. So, yes, if we can put any pressure on to make the font bigger on the back page, that would be really
While
nice.
we're talking about a program, though, because I was obviously not involved with the program anymore, completely unofficial, not in any way any kind of volunteer, just to have time to indulge in the happy hour. Excellent, like the happy hour, £5 a pint. More power to people's elbow, whoever did that. Keep it going at least for another 6 weeks or so. Do it midweek, one of Pisser Jr., as I'm now going to call them, because this is Lee Willett's son, and Lee Willett's son, and Matt Everard's son and Francis, who is Xavier Wiggins's son, are now part of a little posse of 18-year-olds that go to games,
Oh, my giddy arm.
which, apart from making me feel really old, is fabulous in itself because they all drink and they all want to drink. And he said, Archie is Lee's son. He said to me Saturday, "Can we make it like as soon as the ground opens for at least an hour and a half on a Tuesday night for Cardiff?" And you can see what carnage that would be, especially if you let the Cardiff fans do that as well. So
Oh,
they've
my
sold
kid.
out their end and they're really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's good. Well, I mean, I think that's a great thing. I wouldn't be surprised if they keep that. I'm wondering if they might extend it a bit to afterwards. There might be a bit after the game where they, because people often drift off afterwards. So if you can keep
I
it,
mean, it was great. The
if you can keep a happy hour,
the
then
happy hour at the beginning was
the
great.
happy hour,
It worked perfectly,
and also,
it was great.
and I think the fact that the drink, the it's the same drinks throughout the ground now, so that you don't just have to be in the bar to get a particular drink. Those drinks are everywhere.
Hopefully that will mean the queues aren't quite so big because I'm not sure that very many people use the bar on the East Stand. And you could easily use the bar on the East Stand and then wander back around. Different food choices. What's the place for
The
the food
food the
choices?
so the food is interesting because looking at it, there wasn't La Pasta, Mai Pie, Ding Dong, or the Greek wrap that's sort of Souvlaki, I think it's
Yes,
called.
they were there. Well, they
Were
were
they
listed as
there?
being there.
They weren't. They weren't there. I mean, I
Okay.
didn't. They weren't there.
They
I didn't
were
see them.
listed in the pre-match thing as being there.
But they weren't there. And my understanding with La Pasta is that they were on holiday, so they should be back for the next one. But definitely, Mai Pie and Ding Dong will not be there.
I think the Ding Dong one I heard they were trying to sort out because it was something to do with the fact they were leaving their trailer there and they've been told they can't leave their trailer there. So that's what I heard. And that they were trying to come up with some sort of thing because apparently they'd upgraded the trailer for this season and didn't know that they couldn't leave it there, which apparently they'd previously been doing. But that, so I think they're trying to resolve that. That's what I heard.
So Actually, for me, this is a very important part of the podcast, right? So what now are the food choices for you, your
Well,
personal faves on what you're looking at? What
mine was always
looks
Dochac.
good?
I've got to say, I'm quite a pizza traditionalist, almost nostalgist. And cost wise, somebody mentioned on socials that one of the new burger places is also at the Oval. And I think realistically, the tickets at the Oval or for cricket, T20 or whatever the games are there, are relatively expensive as well. And I think realistically, that's the type of thing that we just have to get used to. If you went to a festival on Wimbledon Common, for example, I suspect that you'd be paying similar prices to that.
It is expensive now. So I had the pulled pork burger, and this was on its own. So pulled pork, there was some bacon and cheese in it. It was nice. I mean, it was nice.
Which one was, where is that from? That wasn't from the same venison and vegan one.
It's from no. That was from Mr. Pork. Imaginative name, Mr. Pork, and it was almost 12 quid just for a plain burger. And if you want to add chips on that, it's another
But
three quid. So it's like 50 quid.
if you bought a burger in a leather bottle,
yeah,
what would
you're
that cost
talking,
you?
yeah, you're talking the
I
same.
don't
Is
know. I
that
might find out. But I think the thing is that I think I wouldn't be surprised if people do the thing with the leather bottle and other is you can get somewhere to sit. I mean, and there is enough places to sit, is my general thought, really. And I think that more people. Oh, Mark, you ate in a local cafe.
Yeah, but that's because I was like 2.5 hours early.
Yeah,
I went to
but I
give
think.
blood, and then I had, and I it was like 12 o'clock, and
Yeah.
I knew that the stadium would just about be open. As even then, even having eaten,
Yeah.
I probably got a better deal. That's true. The cafe was like 9 quid, but I just given blood, so I needed that kind of carbohydrate quick
Yeah.
stuff, you know.
But no, but I mean, what I'm trying to say is, in actual fact, it's not a bad thing, because I think one of the great things about football in its community environment is it's, yes, we want people to be spending in the ground, but also it's good for the local economy to have our supporters who can eat and drink at local pubs. I mean, after the Notts County game, the leather bottle was jam packed. I think it's quite nice to have those other options.
Yeah, I mean, I think again, maybe it is a bit expensive. I don't know. Like, I had a vegan burger. It was very good. It's £11.75. I glanced at the packaging that they unraveled, and it was a Linda McCartney burger because they're not obviously their own. But I hadn't had one of those vegan ones before. It was nice, but it was £11.75. So I was not going to buy chips as well because chips were a fiver on top. But it was a good burger, and I probably paid. I think I have paid the same for a vegan burger at the Leather Bottle. I think the happy hour will get people there. That's cool. I mean, that's a big difference. Like £1.50, £2 off your pint for that first hour. You can just have a couple of beers then. You don't have to, And again, they were fast. So, yeah. And also, I mean, the last thing to say on that is that it's a better deal. We've been told it's a better deal that the pitch prices and whatever are for the club. So it's like, let's just remember that.
It's a better deal
This
for the
is another
club and a
conversation
better
I
support.
had. Someone was saying to me on Saturday that they had been told that previously, for every tenner approximately that the burgers or whatever the food outlet was, the food item was, for every tenner that a fan was spending on food last season in one of the independent food outlets, the club was getting £1. So 10%. So by the extension, the food is more expensive because the fee that the Aramark themselves are charging, which by the way is also taking another administrative job away from the club staff, and we know that they are relatively underpowered in terms of the number of staff they have to be able to cater for everything. So that is exactly what a catering organisation should do. And if therefore we're getting that much more, even if it's, I don't know, 3, 4 quid rather than a quid, then you're getting 2 or 3 extra pounds for every burger that's being eaten, which actually is the way in which a sustainable football club should work, right? Isn't it?
Oh no,
I
I
totally
think I
agree.
agree with you, I think I agree with you. I just think probably, I mean, a lot of people. I mean, I will miss my pie. It was really good, and it was great value. It was like 12 quid for pie, mash, and peas. But and if they came back, obviously the only way they can make it work would be to charge 15 quid. But that seems to be the price, and maybe people would pay it. It's one of those things, but. Overall, it was a great atmosphere. The happy hour thing is working. There is a good food offering. There's the pork thing, there's the venison, and then there's a ch the
Yeah, it's
chicken.
chicken
There's a
something.
chicken
I can't remember what it's
place as
called. Yeah.
well, which actually wasn't that
I mean,
much more
someone did say
expensive.
to me that the naked chip people were moaning a little bit about the price increase, but I was like, but you're there. So it's clearly you're still worth being there. So I mean, I'm going to probably mix it up. I'm probably going to go naked chips and vegan burgers on Saturdays, and don't know what I'll do on Tuesday. Probably have a meal deal on the train in, so I'm not broke by the end of the month.
But if we're getting 7,000 home fans approximately, plus whatever away fans, and Cardiff have already sold out 1,000 plus or whatever allocation they'll get for a Tuesday night, and there are a lot of people missing on Saturday because it's school holidays, as we know, it's too early. If anyone, any food outlet is guaranteed a slice of 7,000 worth of home fans.
Yeah, I'm not. Listen, I think overall, we need to work out the best deal for the club. I get it. I mean, people are going to miss the offerings, but I completely get it. Now then, lads, moving on to this. Just a couple of short things. Obviously, we're recording this before on the Monday before the Don's Trust SGM. So there's the vote on the shares for John Green. Hopefully people have understood what they're voting for now. So I'm sure that will pass without a problem. And the other thing to say, and I think Adam was particularly excited by this, was that on Saturday it was pointed out to us that Ollie Palmer was in the crowd. So, you know, there's all the rumours, what's happening with Bugle, because he wasn't in the squad even on Saturday. Ollie Palmer in the stands.
Yeah, but that's only because people were just winding me up by the fact that Ollie Palmer would be replacing Bugle just to annoy me. That's no nonsense. He's clearly not fit. That's why he's not on the bench. Like, we put the fittest players on the squad on the bench. Whatever, Ollie Palmer, no. Sorry, just not interested.
Well, I mean, like, you know, are these decisions going for you, Adam? I mean, I don't know. So, anyhow, but that was just
quite a week. I mean, how much of £6,000 a week can we afford? And I don't think we can afford anything of £6,000 a week unless you move somebody on. But actually, if you're going to move, I'm not saying we should, and don't want to upset Adam, but if you were to think about moving Bugle on, actually, his abilities and what he brings to us as a team and a group, I think, is far and away higher than his actual goal scoring. But if you then think, well, hang on, he's a goal scorer. Likewise, Kane's supposed to be a goal scorer. And neither of those, unfortunately, are really going to attract. They're both under contract.
Yeah.
Are they going to attract a big transfer fee? So then you end up loaning one of our own players out to get a loan player in at a high level. And we don't have the money, do we?
No, I don't. But it was just interesting that he was spotted there, and there's all these
rumours
flying around.
Another internet rumour flying around.
I love it.
Via the Lewis children that read Reddit quite a lot, and there's lots of Reddit fans forums, apparently, is that we're in line to get another Charlton loanee. Don't know who it is. No insider knowledge whatsoever. But again, that's only going to happen after the first round of EFL Cup games, League Cup games this week.
Well.
Charlton have just let Taylor go, who's one of the defensive midfield players, to Northampton. I don't know who else could be in line. You know, we still need wing back cover.
We do need wing back cover. I think that's definitely what we need. Anyhow, okay, chaps, it's great. I mean, like, it's been fantastic. What a fantastic start. I mean, like, the first game of the season, very exciting. Didn't feel like a defeat. The second game, brilliant victory. Because as you say, Adam, you know, when side goes down to 10, it's difficult, and sometimes they could hit us on the break, but we stood our ground. We recorded our first victory, so we're up and running and we're doing okay.
We're not going to get carried away though, because we are now playing in Reading, a team that lost to Lincoln.
Yeah, so that's going to be very interesting. And we've sold our initial allocation, so I think it's going to be, we're going to have a sizable crowd up in Reading, which is going to be fantastic.
Don's away, ole ole.
Don's away, ole ole indeed, my friend.
Yeah, well, hopefully I'm going, so I just need to. I'm just waiting for Martin. Is suggesting he might be able to invite me into the boardroom, but I'm waiting for him to find out. So I know. So otherwise, I said we'll get a ticket. Yeah.
Hold on, what was that noise I just heard dropping?
Well, I can't tell. Well, I've got to be honest. I'm just saying that's what I'm waiting on. Otherwise, I'm going to buy a regular ticket because it's just down the road, really.
Yeah. But the point is, chaps, we're up and running and we're doing well. Unlike some fellow supporters that are going through it. Last week, we spoke to the Shrimpers Trust about what's going on at Morecambe. And today, I'm delighted that we're joined by Mark Johnson from the Sheffield Wednesday Supporters Trust to tell us what's going on down there. So listen to this, and I'm sure most of you will empathise the situation that he's going through. Right then, now we come to the part of the show where we're inviting on some special guests to talk about situations at their club, situations that we can empathise with as AFC Wimbledon fans, and particularly here at the Same Old Wombles podcast. I'm delighted to welcome Mark Johnson from the Sheffield Wednesday Supporters Trust to give us a little bit of an update about what's going on at Sheffield Wednesday and what the next steps are. I mean, last week we spoke to someone from Morecambe, and it sounds like a horrendous situation there. Sounds like a horrendous situation at Sheffield Wednesday. Mark, what the hell is going on?
It's all bad, generally, although yesterday we had a little bit of respite because, you know, obviously we had the protest and, you know, lots of support from the football family. But I guess our biggest problem is that the owner, Dejvan Chansiri, has stopped funding the club and shows no sign of actually selling the club or wanting to sell the club either, which from the outside seems almost unbelievable and impossible as a situation. But, you know, going back into how the club sale was originally funded and where the money came from, we don't know that either. So we don't know the source of funding. We don't know, you know, where the money came from or where it went to. And now it seems like the current owner is holding out for what's reported to be £100 million. And clearly the club is worth less than half of that, I think. He's also already rejected an offer, his own words, of around £40-45 million. So, which seems like fair value, especially that was before we sold all the players as well. So, you know, it's a difficult situation because there doesn't seem to be an easy way out of this. I suppose from a regulatory perspective, we've fallen between the two stools. We've still got the EFL that are supporting us as best they can. We hope that the regulator will help other clubs who are in our situation when that comes in. It still could be that the regulator might be in place and might just help us to get stuff over the line. But it depends very much on how they hit the ground running. We've already got an in with the regulator through Clive Betts, who's doing a fantastic job. In terms of the situation on the ground, we've lost so many players, and for either free or for ridiculous sums of money, that the squad is now at rock bottom. I think we've got 13 senior players, but some of those are rumoured to be leaving, handed in the notice. We got two big injuries yesterday with Chalabar and Valerie, and of course Bannon was sent off. But yeah, we're really down to the bare bones, and we are going to be uncompetitive fairly quickly. We did okay yesterday. In terms of the other stuff that's going on, you know, obviously we've lost Danny Roll, we've got a new manager, but there's no coaching staff. We've got, you know, very few support staff either. So from, you know, you might have heard the story that the club couldn't afford to fund sock tape for the players. The staff haven't been paid. You know, the trust have set up a hardship fund, which some of the staff have taken advantage of. Obviously, it's sometimes very difficult if people are getting benefits anyway, because a lot of people on very low income. Obviously, the players haven't been paid for 4 months out of five. The North Stand ground, the stadium, I'm in the safety advisory group meetings, and the North Stand is going to be closed. There is a meeting today between the club and the council about that, and then we've got another meeting on Wednesday about logistics. I sit in the North Stand, and there's no information that's come out of the club on what's happening yet. Now, if you can imagine, we play Stoke City next weekend and we've got 7,000 season ticket holders in that stand, and they're going to have to be redistributed onto the other three sides of the ground. And that includes people. It's okay for me, you know, I can go and sit anywhere. Probably don't want to. But there's people with, you know, large groups of families, of people who are, you know, ambulant disabled. There's disabled fans themselves who are sighted in that area. So it's a logistical nightmare. It also worries people quite a lot that they can't, they don't know where they're going. You know, for a lot of people, it's a terrible situation to be in. We've got a lot of creditors of the football club, you know, local businesses that are owed money. There's this, you know, they weirdly introduced facial recognition and a new CCTV scheme in February, all at the same time they weren't investing in the North Stand. there's a whole host of decisions that defy belief, to be honest. So it can feel quite pressurized, but we've got a lot of support from local and national politicians, other fan bases, including your own, have been absolutely fantastic with us. And that really gets people through, I think, because it's you've been through similar situations, and you do need the support of your fellow fans just to make you feel relatively normal from time to time, because there are some significant pressures that come onto people, and some people can cope better than others with that. So there's a lot happening. And yesterday we had the big protest, which we stayed out of the ground for 5 minutes and then came in afterwards, which was a big success. Leicester City, as a football club, were absolutely phenomenal. The way they stewarded and helped us to do that, the way they understood it was great. We're not used to that because our club doesn't engage with the fans. I mean, they said that they hated us. I'm sure they don't. It just feels that way sometimes. Sky Sports were amazing. The Leicester City fans, yeah, it was pretty emotional when the fans came in and they all started applauding. You just don't expect that. And yeah, it's been a bit of a tough old few months, and I think it's going to get tougher. As you guys know, there's it gets a lot worse before it gets a lot better. So what we have got is we've got some people we've seen who've gone through the bottom of it and come out the other side. So there's yourselves, Reading are still on a little bit of a rocky course, aren't they? But Bolton have come through it, Derby have come through it. And if it has to be a Phoenix club, we've got people we can ask and set that up. We've already registered the Wednesday FC, so we hope it doesn't come to that. But yeah, we'd have to fight our way back like yourselves and like Barry are trying to do.
Well, for me, just hearing that is just such a sorry story of everything there. I mean, it was just as though, what else is there in football as a football club that could possibly go wrong? I mean, it was a massive list, and obviously at AFC Wimbledon, we've experienced trauma. There are scars amongst the people here. We were all heavily involved in the reformation and the protests during that fateful season for us. And it just feels that this is exactly the reason why we need a regulator, and why that is, because obviously I've been heavily involved in it and in the regulator, and the ability to remove an owner who is behaving in such a obviously reckless manner, with a complete disregard for the heritage and traditions of the fans, is just not acceptable. And I think you'll find a lot of friends, definitely on this podcast, that all of us will be feeling the same, and amongst the Wimbledon fan base will be feeling the same, and will be very much, keen to do anything we can to support anything that shows that ability of solidarity for what you're going through, because it's not right. And I think all of us will be feeling that way. So certainly our hands are there to say, right, just let us know what we need to do, and we will do it. Because it's not right. I mean, that is just such a sorry state. I was really impressed with the 5 minute 5 minute protest, and we did a whole load of different protests during our time. Mark Lewis here was like heavily involved with the Wimbledon Independent Supporters Association at the time, coordinating things. I was running an alternative program, so it's very much in our blood about that. So there is a huge amount of respect, because you're limited to what you can do. In that kind of situation, what was the case with us is the disconnect between the owners and the fans. The actually bit where you just feel they are not listening, they really don't care, and they don't get it. And that was the pain. Obviously, I mean, you mentioned Wednesday FC, and been there, done that. Great, by the way. Absolutely great. So, any of your fan base ever think, right, oh God, we've got to start all over again, and we have to play in the Northwest Counties League Division 9 or whatever it is? We had a whale of a time coming up through the leagues. It's really
When it
good
says
when you get
absolutely great, we
that.
did have a whale of a time, but
It's quite tricky, not easy.
listening to your stories, Mark, they're apart from pulling at the heartstrings, because I've been to Hillsborough and because Sheffield is a big city, goes without saying that obviously a city that big should be able to more than provide for and survive, help and thrive, not even just survive, two large professional football clubs. But yeah, it does definitely evoke a lot of the different things. as Niall said, you know, I was involved as part of the supporters group, and I was one of the group. It wasn't just Niall, but Niall was the editor, but it wasn't just Niall that was running that program. There was a few of us that came together. And like I said, actually, with the Morecambe fan last week, you're doing it in a social media era, and hopefully that helps, because then the word can get around. I've just one of the few things I do now in terms of helping out the club is sourcing articles from away fans for forthcoming games, and I've just got the article in from the Cardiff fan for next week's midweek game, and he's basically said everything you've said, with the one exception that their owner, whilst being, by the sound of it, really not much higher in the swamp, so to speak, than yours, is actually still financing the club. I guess from your perspective, like we said with the Morecambe guy, is almost a kind of hand to mouth thing. You're literally going day to day or game to game at the moment.
Yeah, it's terrible, isn't it? I mean, I think, you know, we empathise with Morecambe as well, and, you know, lots of contact with them. And I think, you know, one of the things, I came down to the Cherry Red Stadium for the Fair Game Conference, and I did the tour. And I think, was it Sutton? Did you play at Sutton or something like that? And just to see
Yes.
all those fans, it made you think,
First ever game.
actually, you know, I don't want that to happen. But if it did happen, there would be some things along the way that would be quite cool to do that. And the way that you guys have obviously gone through that, your fan base has gone through that and come back to where you've got to, shows that obviously with the right amount of effort, and that, you know, there would be effort going in, it is very difficult, then it can be achieved. And to some extent you clear away all the rubbish and the mess, because we are absolutely sickened by football. The people on the board and the wider fan base, we hate it. You know, the money and everything that's gone through it makes you really question whether you want to be part of a club owned by the people that we get owned by. And, you know, eventually you do it because it's in your blood. But, you know, there's something terrible about it, because you can see where all this money's come from and where it goes to. And it just feels, it makes you know, it chips away at your soul, doesn't it? To see
Yeah.
it and to see your club that's been part of that. There's something fundamental about it that you kind of think, it's actually changed forever my relationship. Not necessarily Wednesday, but with the way that Wednesday have to behave to be a competitive club these days, it just
Yeah.
feels dirty.
One of the things that I wondered was, getting into this situation, this feels like a problem in the Championship more than any other of the divisions, is that gambling to get into the Premier League. And it felt like the owners gambled to try and get in the Premier League, and when that didn't work, and they've run out of money, and then it's getting greedy. Then it's about hanging on to try and get that 100 million. What I don't understand, and this was the same question we had with Morecambe last week, was you're going to get in a position where you're going to end up with nothing. I mean, either you take the 50 million, which is, you know, of whack, or the 40 million, or whatever it is, or you get nothing. I don't understand if by the club, you know, going into being liquidated or going into administration, what does the owner get? And the other thing, I guess, for you, the question at the moment is, what are the deadlines coming up? What are the deadlines that the club have to meet to ensure that they continue playing this season?
So on the first part of that question, is the question of why you won't sell up. Now, it's difficult to speculate, isn't it? But if you think of Hillsborough Stadium on paper, in the accounts in a shell company, is worth £60 million. It's worth £60 million. It generates £2.75 million of rental from Sheffield Wednesday Football Club every year. It's worth £60 million. That's more than was bid for the whole club, including the stadium. So why would you crystallise that loss by taking that? What would happen to that? Now, I'm not saying that that's happening at Sheffield Wednesday, but clearly, you know, if you've got a club that's valued on paper at £100 million, it's some hit to sell it for 40, isn't it? You know, somewhere there's a hit to something. In terms of the second point about deadlines, etc., well, it's all about payments, I guess. You know, the EFL wants to keep us competitive. There is supposedly a business plan in place. The EFL have said that they talk to the club every day. Some of the payments coming through from solidarity payments have come through, and then we get the monthly payments from the EFL. But they aren't sufficient to run a championship club of any standing. And it's a death spiral, because one thing, a bit like with Shakespeare, with Sherlock and Moriarty on the Rackham Black Falls, we're in a kind of we're in a death grip and we've thrown ourselves off, you know, because we are defunding him. We're defunding him, but we're also defunding the club. So we've got season ticket refunds that are going in. We're not buying the shirts. They sold 29 on the first day rather than 1,500. So the money that's coming into the club gets less and less and less, and the amount that they can afford is less and less and less. And obviously, you know, it only becomes sustainable at a certain level. Where we end up with that, I don't know, is it League One, is it League Two? But as that goes through, it can't, you know, you can't get to that stage without it hitting some kind of impossible moment where it just goes into administration or somebody pulls the plug or we become uncompetitive. You know, there's just no real answers, but we feel that we have some bullet holes, but no smoking gun at the moment.
Yeah.
It
Is there
just
a
feels for me,
buyer?
Mark. Sorry, Matt. Just feels for me that I mean, literally, as a Wimbledon fan, and what we've been through, that starting again, and you talked about clearing out all the cobwebs, not having all that dependency, having a different attitude towards the fans and the players, is what really feels like it's needed here. Because you've either got to find an owner that gets that, and they're few and far between, or you start again. Because the way I would always look at it, and then what I think is the big thing that happened with us, is that you'd look at the fan base, and the fan base is full of people who are brilliant at actually dealing with all these issues. There's a person who can deal with everything in that fan base, and obviously we're a much smaller fan base than you guys, so the talent that you have at your disposal is massive, and obviously your owner has utterly ignored that. The prospect of a Wednesday FC embracing your fan base is so also massively exciting. You know, I mean, like, the thing I'd be like is, how the hell can you keep Hillsborough? That'd be the one bit. That's the attachment. But it feels, you know, you're going to be in a situation where you're going to have like 10 senior players. You know, your bench wasn't even full. You're going to have one of the stands shut down. Your backroom staff are all going to be leaving. You're not going to have the administration to run a football club as it stands. The only way to sufficiently run and operate Sheffield Wednesday as a football club, in my mind, is to get the fans in to do it. Because at least you will have the talent. You will have somebody who is a brilliant HR officer. You will have somebody who's a finance director. You will have somebody who probably edits and produces programs or whatever. You know, all of that will be there, and it feels like you just need to sweep them away, because it just feels so just terminal. And it's weird, because you're talking to a very rare fan base that will say that sounds terrible, but also immensely exciting.
Yeah, I think that was one of,
Exhausting, Mark. It's exhausting. And it take and it and it takes time. I mean, it does sound exhausting, but there is a period where it's, you know, it's I think Niall's very keen on it, because he loves own fan ownership. I think we would wish you all the best of success in trying to maintain your position, and hopefully there's a buyer. Is there someone interested in buying the club? Have you got potential buyers?
There were people interested. And one of them, well, one of the consortium included a local guy called Adam Scott. And, you know, they were definitely interested, and they've probably put the earliest bid in. They're the named bids. There's lots of rumours about other bids, and it does seem like there's definitely some traction around John Textor, who's the ex Palace financer, also involved with Lyon and Botafogo, and yeah, obviously comes with some baggage, I would say. But you know, at the moment, the fan base will absolutely welcome the local arm with open arms. I think to get back to, you know, Niall's point, I kind of, yes, we have got, you know, we put together, we know what skill sets we have. It's much greater than the club can afford at the moment, at least. And we've got a lot of people who've got experience in lots of different types of things. I mean, the dream would be to have some kind of funding that would enable us to manage the club commercially and professionally. And, you know, there are a number of avenues that we're discussing with lots of different people, as you can imagine, and we're trying not to rule anything out. We know what is possible with the fan base. But one of the frustrating things about Sheffield as a city, it's not filled with masses and masses of multimillionaires. It's a lovely city. It's a great city. It's filled with loads of professional people, doctors, lawyers, etc. Loads of people love living there and stay there after university, but it isn't the kind of powerhouse, kind of the northern powerhouse of Manchester or Leeds, where there's stuck load of people who, have made a fortune, a vast amount of money. And so we kind of tend to work a little bit differently, and we probably have got the skills and expertise. What we haven't got, we can't recapitalize the club with the funding that we have, and we need support, or we need to start again and make it a sustainable business, which would be a tremendous thing for a club like Sheffield Wednesday to be able to do, because I think it would be a great thing. Other fan bases, like we look at your fan base and what you've been able to do, the ground that you've been able to build, and the position that you've been able to reach. If we were to do that as well, you'd say, well, there's an economic model there to make things sustainable, and that would be, as just a fan of football, quite exciting. I think it's also quite threatening to the status quo, which is probably exciting as well. But it really, it's not going to be the easiest thing to do, and we would have to embrace that, and the fan base would have to embrace that as well. But when you get pushed up against the wall, I guess there's no other way to go but
That
to
was what I was
make.
going to ask about the fan base, because even within the relatively small fan base that Wimbledon has in the great scheme of things, we had a scenario with the, I don't know, 8 to 10,000 or so fans we had at Selhurst, where people were not supporting the demonstrations, and they just wanted to, in inverted commas, watch the football, and told us, as the rest of the fans who were self engaged, to basically sit down and shut up, so to speak. Obviously, with Sheffield Wednesday, you have a much bigger fan base, and I would hope that obviously Sheffield United and Sheffield Wednesday are, so to speak, bitter rivals across the Steel City. But you would hope that you've got their support. Is the fan base, you think, within the Wednesdayites, the Owlites, united in terms of we want a resolution and we're prepared to all back whatever the resolution is, as long as it's not the shambles we've got right now?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point, and the fan base has been on a journey, an X Factor journey with this, and it's been difficult. When there was a group before, well, there's a group alongside the Trust called the 1867 who organised a lot of protests, inspired by Reading fans, leaflets, tennis balls, and sometimes they were spat at. It was horrendous, really, what those guys went through. But there's been, because Chancellery is so bad, he's actually got the whole fan base together. We did an independent survey which the FSA helped us with, and it was 96% wanted him to sell, and that's only got more and more. And as I say, 29 people bought the shirt on day one. Nobody's wearing it. Literally, I went to Tramlines Festival. There's 40,000 people there. There's not one new Wednesday shirt. There wasn't one in the stands yesterday. The fan base now is vast majority wants him out. Obviously, there's still differences about what people want to do. Some people want to run on the pitch and do the kind of H. Jones in the Falklands and kind of die in a hail of bullets. Some people want to kind of just sit there and hold a banner up. But the fact is that everybody, almost everybody, is for getting him out. And so, but that's been, that hasn't happened overnight, and it's had to get to such a terrible state to get everybody there. But now we are here. What we as a trust are finding, trying to make sure, is that everybody stays on side, and that includes other fan groups who feel a little bit put out because the trust have taken over. And we've got some really brilliant fan groups at Wednesday. We've got the women's group, Rainbow Owls, Armed Forces Owls, run by some fantastic people. And I'm not saying they're the ones actually who are kind of. Are a little bit put out by it, but we all have to find a way to work together, but the trust has to lead it. And so, that does become difficult for everybody to kind of, and people have managed it so far, but it will become harder and harder, no doubt, when we have to choose next what we do, protesting against Stoke. Will everybody get behind that?
I was going to say, obviously, one thing you've got there is because there's clearly no action from the owners. We had owners that were lying to the fan base and trying to convince the fan base of all kind of strange things, and we had to kind of prove that those were complete fabrications. So I think you've got that behind you that galvanizes you. You've got a clear, obvious enemy in that sense. The thing I would say is probably is to start to really think about what all those protests are going to be, because you kind of got to just line them up now. And, you know, we spent a year protesting. It was pretty horrendous. It was a horrible year of football, to be honest. We didn't really watch football. We just protested every game. But there was always we always knew there was something that we were going to be doing. I think someone posted today, the black balloons was like this week or something, on this weekend, that we did a protest where we had loads of black balloons. I think, and again, also, I don't remember any, you know, we did a whole one where we were facing the wrong way, so we didn't watch the game. Obviously, the very last kind of one was when we stood outside the match, but it was all done and dusted by that point anyway. There wasn't any big disruption though of the game itself. I think that's the thing. You know, we obviously boycotted we didn't buy any merchandise. We had a separate program that we then put that money in so that we could have funds, etc. So I think, yeah, you need to think of a battle plan basically as much as possible and get everyone behind. And again, like Mark says, with social media, you can tell everyone what the plan is for that game. But I think respecting the match is really important, and making it clear those protests are against the owner and the ownership model, you know.
Again, I mean, like things we did with the yellow and blue program. So having your own program, so people aren't buying the club merchandise, having your own sort of like t-shirts or things like that, you know, like you start to get the message out. But I mean, I think I just want to finish, Mark, on this, just to say that, you know, you have all of our support. And in actual fact, Dons Trust have put out a statement today. So we'll put that in our links. The Dons Trust put out a statement there. And the last paragraph is, too many clubs have suffered the threat of going out of existence. We urge all football governance to work with support organisations to ensure the long-term health of our clubs, our communities and the game we love. And I think that says it all from us. You have our total support. And if anything happens, if the worst happens, then you know you could come to us. I mean, we would gladly be your first pre-season friendly. I'm speaking on behalf of the club. I have no legitimate reason to do that. I'm calling it. And I think my sincere hope is that in the next couple of weeks, things are sorted and you can carry on playing in the Championship. And the result yesterday was amazing, considering everything. I think, yeah, you know, I think it's brilliant. And you have to remember that although there's a period of 90 minutes where we're all at each other's throats, together as a football family, we are 100% behind each other. So the best of luck to you, Mark. The best of luck to Sheffield Wednesday and to all the clubs that are in the hands of those charlatans, to be honest with you. And Mark, we hope to catch up with you soon. Take good care, yeah, and the best of luck for the season.
Thank you very much. That's been amazing, guys. And great to get some things off my chest, actually, as well. So I'm sure you've all been in that position. And hope you have a great season. You've had a great start, I think, from looking at the results. And good crowds as well. So upwards and onwards. Thanks very much. And hopefully we'll see you in the Championship rather than League One.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That would be nice.
Take care.
Thank you, Mark.
Bye.
But thank you very much there to Mark from the Sheffield Wanderers Supports Club. And thank you very much to our regular panel, our friend, Al Cooper, Dr. Adam Proctor, the wonderful football guru that is tall Mark Lewis. I'm Matt Cooper. We are the same old Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. Under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If we win or we lose, we just go on.
In this week, the 30th of August.
You want to start again, Matt, because you messed it up.
I fucking hate you.
Don't make me edit this much, flipping heck.
Take three.